you know, you've probably had one of those weeks too where everything seemed to go wrong or break at once. Why does it happen like that? It can't just space itself out. Now, I have to admit, granted, that can seem trivial compared to the large losses that you've just heard about this morning. But, you know, when you have one of those days or weeks where everything goes wrong, it contributes to the sense of frustration, if not outright despair. So not too long ago, after a long litany of things that broke, the dishwasher, the brakes on my husband's bike, the symbolic climax of all that was going wrong was with my computer. I was trying to get on the internet. I kept getting the same message, can't connect to proxy server. I stayed up half the night, fortunately not last night, but half the night doing battle with this proxy server thing, but to no avail. In the morning, I finally called the computer service guy, and he said, it's a virus. It's buried deep in your operating system. It's going to cost you $125 for me to root it out. So, I asked him, I said, so what is the purpose of this virus? Did these hackers want to access my information? Could they get into my bank account, my credit history? He said, no, it's just to mess with people. He said, it's just to show you how vulnerable you are. Oh, that is so wrong. That is so wrong. Just wrong. At the same time, he was a bit of a philosopher, right? A theologian, because they hit on a deeper truth, that we are vulnerable to things beyond our control. There are times in our personal lives and in the life of the world that despite our efforts to have a normal, stable life without having done anything to deserve it, those things that constitute the center of our lives falls apart. And as Yeats reminds us, the center does not hold. So that's the title of my sermon this morning, When the Center Does Not Hold. If you happen to be here last Sunday, you may have heard fellowship member Mark Marnaka talk about, as I said earlier, flow and what happens when things don't flow. And he referenced, just a brief reference to this famous line from the Yeats poem. And Yeats was writing about the aftermath of World War I and was in part bemoaning the decline of European civilization as he saw it. I found it interesting to note that this line about the center does not hold was quoted more in the first 7 months of 2016 than in any of the preceding 30 years. So he seems to have captured an anxiety that is out there in the world today. Whether it's about the ongoing tensions in Israel, Palestine, the absolute devastation that is Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, whether it's violence in the Ukraine or in the neighborhoods of Milwaukee or St. Paul. Things fall apart, he writes. The center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. Yeats's poem has become prophetic in a way. We have good reason to feel that sometimes anarchy has been loosed in the world, and that whatever center we may have imagined existed has fallen apart. The world's outer chaos can feel like a representation of our own inner chaos, a life out of balance, out of the center, not holding. And you know what I'm talking about, these things both large and small. Maybe it's, you know, as something like your two-year-old chooses to have a public meltdown on a daily basis, or maybe your preteen is exploring porn sites, or your high school senior has decided that college or vocational training or a job are not for him. He wants to live in your basement and play video games. Your husband or wife tells you that he or she wants a divorce. You lose your job. Your body parts are not working like they used to. Your doctor comes in the room with a grave look on her face. Your beloved dies. And what was your life? You were simply humming along, and its predictable patterns has suddenly become filled with a drama that you did not want and you did not expect. What do you do? Well, this morning I want to look at the different places where we go when we need to regain a sense of balance, to get back to that center as best we can, that center which sort of helps hold a life together. And I put them in three groupings. We may seek faith, we may seek the familiar, or we may seek fellowship to find our center once again. Many people seek faith in times of inner or outer chaos in the comfort of a single story, a story that was once was or still is representative of a center, a story that frames everything that happens and makes all the difficulty and evil that happens in the world and in our lives more bearable because it seems to explain and soothe the pain. So that story could be that there is a God who loves us, that cares for each of us personally, and that we are saved or redeemed by the sacrifice of God's Son, Jesus, on the cross. I've heard the phrase, everything must happen for a reason, as a way that people try to explain the chaos that is happening in their lives or in the life of the world. Maybe that's a story about the greatness of one God who had a prophet and a messenger named Muhammad, and that the teachings of Muhammad are salvific. To have a single story or a single phrase that we cling to during hard times can indeed be a source of great comfort because the multiplicity of competing truths can be overwhelming. At the same time, any faith that can be summarized in a single saving story and one truth can all too easily become doctrinaire and fundamentalist. So, Unitarian Universalists have been accused of having no center because we won't claim a single story and truth for everyone for all time because we see that as a strength, not as a weakness. So I like to think of our faith as more like a Venn diagram, which is the picture of two or more overlapping circles. I know most of you have seen such an image before. The Venn diagram shows us that there are many circles that overlap, and today you remember we're talking about circles of truth, circles of faith, and the overlap creates a third space that contains some of the truth of each of the overlapping circles, but it's not the same as any of them. That third space has a unique character, and inevitably, it has to involve different ways, a different way to describe where its center can be found. Now, I suppose there's a mathematical calculation that could help me find the center of this small and irregularly shaped space that's created by these two overlapping circles. But maybe the mathematical center point of faith is not what we're looking for here. I think that actually misses the point. Let's advance to the next slides. Because Unitarian Universalism does not claim one central story, it lives in that third space, this unique space formed by overlapping circles of truth. So you ask any Unitarian Universalist, what is your faith when times are tough? And you may hear different answers. You certainly will hear different answers. Some of them theologically framed and others not. So people hear, for example, that I'm a Unitarian Universalist Christian, and they expect me to say something about how God and Jesus and the Bible are the important things at the center of my faith, and that that's where I turn to. But as a Unitarian Universalist, I also believe powerfully in the fact that there is more than one narrative, more than one center to the space my religion occupies, and that sustains me when I am in pain. So living with more than one story doesn't lend itself to easy and short sentences of description. You have to keep unpacking it. That's part of our faith as well. I guess I should claim, if I'm scrupulous in describing myself, as a Christian humanist Unitarian Universalist. Now there's a mashup for you, right? Because I find in each one of those four stories, four names, a story that has meaning. The Christian story of a man who is willing to die for a great love inspires and comforts me. The humanist story that insists on the human capacity to hold both reason and awe and mystery grounds me in human hope. And the Unitarian Universalist stories point towards a long lineage of people who have struggled to make a uniting meaning and message out of two different faith traditions. And they want to see the world through the lens of love instead of depravity. These four stories guide and direct the way that I want to see the world. And they encourage me through hard times. This third space that I'm talking about has room for more than faith to comfort me when I need to seek refuge from the chaos of the world. Some of what holds that space is familiar comforts, people and places that we always turn to when we need healing. We turn to the familiarity of the natural world and find comfort and healing of what is wild in that third space. And I need to quote the poet Wendell Berry, who writes, "When despair grows in me and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water and where the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water. And I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting for their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free." So we also turn to the familiar companionship of family, of friends, the circle of people who have been with you, some of them your whole life. And among them you will find the people who you can count on and who stand by you when the center does not hold. They are there in that third space of comfort. And you all know who they are to you and what they mean to you. So think for a moment about those people in your life and hold them in your hearts for just a moment together in silence. I have one other familiar comfort that's always contained in this space, that space where I go when the center does not hold. I always find that when I need comfort in the midst of chaos, music is one of my go-to places. Now, during my 20s, the only music I listened to was rock and roll and groups like the Sex Pistols and the Clash and names of other groups that are unmentionable in public. All that noise somehow reflected the inner confusion and inner chaos I felt. But then one day, a friend of mine, who is a classical musician, sat me down and he said, "I want you to listen to this." It was the music of Johann Sebastian Bach, a composer whose music I had heard, but I never really listened to. I mean, I dismissed that as old, dead, white guy music. And then I started listening. I heard first a clearly defined theme. And then that theme was joined by another voice that was responding to the theme, but it had its own unique line. And then another voice joined the theme, and for a while I couldn't tell what was happening to that original beginning line. It seemed to pull apart and swirl around me in too many notes. And at one point in the piece, it seemed like the music was just spinning out of control and out of the cosmos, no gravity, free falling through space, and I was actually a little frightened by it. And then suddenly there was that theme again. Maybe it was in a different key. It had changed by this time. But different voices emerged, and then it landed solidly back to where it began. It was not the same theme, but it had been changed by that experience. And I realized that's what our lives are like. We each have our own theme. It's joined by other voices. And for a while, we may not be able to hear or see or understand what's going on, but there is an order amidst what appears to be chaos, and it's our job to be faithful to the music that undergirds our whole lives, even when it seems to be spinning out of control. This fellowship often reminds me of a complex piece of music that has several intrinsic themes that hold it all together as varied instruments play different sounds in different ways. And I use the word fellowship intentionally to describe the third component of where we might go when the center does not hold. It means the place where you sit today, but it's a word used for that broader sense of having companions along the journey. Companions who are not necessarily our blood relatives or our family or even our closest friends, but whom we recognize nevertheless as sharing this important journey with us. All our lives are in need, and others are in need of us. That's a line from one of the responsive readings in our hymnal. And I can tell you, even if you're brand new this Sunday and don't know others sitting around you, I can tell you with 100% certainty that whatever you're going through in your life right now, someone else in this room has gone through or is going through something similar. Parenting problems, health issues, aging parents, frightening diagnosis, loss of spouse, partner, child, job, self-esteem, mental health, it is all right here. So one of the go-to places that help realign our center is connecting with others in community. I know I don't need to tell those of you who have been here a long time about community. But I must say that these recent deaths have reminded me of what it means to be part of a community over time, and why I always encourage newcomers and new members to deeply engage with community. I didn't get to know Mary Kay Camps, but I've been calling friends of hers and people have been writing to me. And I've been so struck by the fact that the women's group that she was a part of since, I think, 1992, those women have formed a bond that became a kind of safety net for each other over the years they've known each other. There's a men's group that's met here many, many years. There's book groups and support groups and interweaving ties and connections that are slowly, sometimes painstakingly, built. Yet at times like this, you realize how important they really are. People presume that when you come to a church or a fellowship, they will find a comforting faith. So sometimes this place and this community can be difficult to understand right away. It's hard to understand that the fellowship is also our faith, if you understand faith the way that I do, as that in which you place your ultimate confidence. I as I was writing this, I was thinking about my Uncle Rudy, who died just recently. He was Catholic. He was a deeply religious man, and because he knew I was a lady priest, he always wanted to talk about religion with me. And when he finally kind of grasped what Unitarian Universalism was about, he said, "You know, I wouldn't like that religion." He said, "I say my prayers, I go to Mass, I get confession, and I'm done." He said, "Your religion sounds like way too much work." You know, I envied that, actually. I envied him. The center of his faith was grounded in this ancient, rich tradition, and he didn't question the theology. He didn't get involved in the dogma or the doctrines or politics. I knew that his simple approach to finding a faith that gave his life meaning worked for him. And it's not that it made his life trouble-free, but he didn't struggle in the same way that I do, that I think we do as Unitarian Universalists, with this idea of what is our faith and how does it help us to deal with the struggles of life. As I said earlier, we don't claim a single narrative. We draw from scripture. We draw from a variety of sources. One of the sources that is like scripture to us is poetry, and it's certainly something I include in my list of familiar things that help me find my center. It reminds me that my life is part of a grander arc. There's one last poem I want to share with you to conclude, and it has a final piece of wisdom about what to do when the center does not hold. It reminds us that we need to have patience to search and to find the center again in that space in your heart where faith and the familiar and fellowship live together. So hear now these words of Galway Kinnell in his poem, Wait. Wait for now. Distrust everything if you have to, but trust the hours. Haven't they carried you everywhere up to now? Personal events will become interesting again. Hair will become interesting. Pain will become interesting. Buds that open out of season will become interesting. Second-hand gloves will become lovely again. Their memories are what give them the need for other hands. I invite you now, if you're willing, able, take the hand of someone next to you. And if for some reason you're uncomfortable doing that or unable to do that, just make a connection with someone beside you. And I conclude with this prayer. Spirit of life, we need no other hands but these. Though we may be challenged by life circumstances, there are resources we can draw upon. Our faith, those things that are familiar and comforting to us, and the fellowship of other souls. We need no other hands but these, and we need no other truth but this, that the way is often hard, the path is never clear, and the stakes are very high. But deep down there is another truth. You are not alone. May it be so.